Hi, everyone. Oh, what a pleasure it is for me to be here with you. I have been to your community before, and like always, I believe that you have welcome really handled. You are such a welcoming and loving community that I always feel like I'm just home being here with you. And it is such a pleasure to be with Paula and Richard. And Paula and Richard, I think, exemplify really kindness and love in all that they do as I see them interact with people and with me. And you are totally blessed to have such an incredible minister here as Paula. Let's thank her. Thank you. And Richard, thank you again for the beautiful music. And Corey, Boyd, you nailed that song. Oh my goodness, that was beautiful. Corey's around here too. Thank you. And Richard, and thank you all. I don't know how you feel, but sometimes I've noticed that conversations can be a little bit difficult at times. Sometimes a little wonky, I think. Well, and I was told about this example. There was a judge who was interviewing a woman who was with a pending divorce. And he asked her, "Now, what are the grounds of your divorce?" And she said, "About 4 acres with a pretty little house right in the middle of the property and a stream running by." He said, "Oh, no, I mean, what is the foundation of your case?" And she said, "Well, it's made of concrete and stone and mortar." He said, No. Let me say, what are your relations like?" "Well, I have an aunt and uncle that live in town, and my husband's parents live there as well." The judge was getting a little frustrated, and he said, "Please, has there been any infidelity in your marriage?" "Yes. My son and daughter both have stereo sets. And we don't necessarily like the music, but the answer to your question is yes." And the judge said, "Oh, madam, please. Does your husband ever beat you up?" "Yes. About twice a week he gets up before I do." Finally, with great frustration, the judge says, "Lady, why do you want a divorce?" "Oh, I don't want a divorce. I have never wanted a divorce. My husband wants a divorce. He says he can't communicate with me." Well, sometimes communication can be like that. Well, I've entitled my talk today, Courageous Conversations. And so what does courageous conversations mean? I believe it is the willingness to look at the deepest and most profound questions of life and not to avoid the feelings around them. Well, what is the benefit of having a courageous conversation instead of just avoiding the whole thing? Well, having the difficult conversation, whatever the subject may be, can bring us to a more freer and a more courageous life. As how many of you have seen the movie Joe and the Volcano? It's a delightful movie, and Meg Ryan is in it, and Tom Hanks. And Meg Ryan's character says this: "Almost the whole world is asleep. Only a few people are awake, and they live in a state of constant amazement." I really want to be part of that group, don't you? Well, and from Helen Keller, life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all. Well, I just published my first book, as Paula had mentioned to you. It's called Accepting Death, Embracing Life, How Death Teaches Us to Live. And I will be out in the lobby with it, available after service. And in it, I really encourage courageous conversations about death and dying. The intention of my book is really to transcend the fear of death so that we can live extraordinary and free lives. And the longer that we avoid or postpone facing death, the more we will fear it. Yes, that's the news bulletin for today, people. No one will make it out of life alive. But you know, so many people sometimes feel that, oh, well, death really won't affect them. It won't happen to them. And that somehow death is a crime, that it really shouldn't have happened. Well, denial of death deprives our life of true meaning. Death actually makes greater life possible because it places our end point squarely in front of us, and we get to remember over and over again that every moment is precious. Every moment is unrepeatable. Well, to tell you the truth, wrong one. To tell you the truth, I had many fears about death and dying myself. When my girlfriends were wondering if they would get a date for our high school prom in high school, our sophomore year, I was dealing with a 3-year process of watching my beloved father die of cancer. And it was a very tumultuous and difficult time for me. And from age 15 until 23 years later, when my mother was dying of cancer, I witnessed 7 of my family members dying of long-term illnesses. Death, cancer, doctors, hospitals, surgeries, treatments, and suffering were all the milieu of my life for all of that time, nearly a quarter of a century. And when my mother was dying, I really vowed that I would find some way to transcend my fear of death. Because during that whole time, there had been most of the time where I was unconscious, where I really was not present. And I vowed that I would be present with my mother. I moved back home to take care of her for the last 3 months of her life until her death. And I was there present with her, witnessing her process, and also being alert to what it was that I was thinking and feeling as well. I learned so very much about death and dying, and my family prepared me in a very practical way for end-of-life care, and I've continued to work with people with their death and dying through my social work practice and also now as a Unity minister. In my book, excuse me, my book is the method that I developed to heal my relationship with death. And it is also a guide to accompany anyone who has been with or is now or will be with a loved one in their dying and their death process. And it includes practical, usable tools for all of us for our own inevitable death. I begin my book talking about a friend of mine and her dying process. When she was dying, it was a very, very difficult process for her. First of all, they could not get the right medications together to ease her pain. So she was in physical pain, which is bad enough. But she was also in mental and spiritual pain as well. Mental pain because she was terrified of dying. And she did not have a clue about what to expect in that process. She was also spiritually in pain because she thought that she would be going to hell and being there for all eternity, as her religion had told her that she probably would. And I wrote this book for many reasons, but one of the reasons was because of her. I really do not want anybody to face death in that kind of a situation. I believe that there is a way to move into death and have a peaceful death and really transcend the fear. And that's what I'm committed to sharing with you now and also through my book. You see the need for the courageous conversations on death and dying. And I know that it is not always easy to talk about death and take responsibility for our own death. I just want to ask, how many here have a will? Very good. And how many have an advance directive? Great, great. You know that these are very important documents. Well, when my husband Don and I decided to make a will, it was very hard. It was very sad for us. And we wept together because it brought up the reality and the inevitability that at some point, one of us would be here without the other. And that was very sad to us. But by avoiding feelings and not talking about death, it cuts us off from a greater life, a freer life. We Unity students, truth students, are really very lucky because of our teachings. We learn to practice the presence of the divine in every situation in our lives, including the difficult times, like the dreaded diagnosis or the inevitability of death or the uncertainty of the future of our health. Because of how Unity began in the late 1800s with Myrtle Fillmore healing herself of a life-threatening illness of tuberculosis. You know the story, I'm sure. She was given only 6 months to live, and all of the worldly methods were not working. She was on the road to dying. But she had a mystical experience, and she came to see that being one with God, merging into God, and all of those other spiritual techniques and practices that she did healed her, and she went on to live healthily for 46 more years. Well, many of us have been well-schooled in these wonderful spiritual principles, and we use them so many times to heal ourselves. And even now, science, with the new science, has validated these healing principles. They say they work. We know they do. And we know that God is all health, strength, wholeness, and wisdom. And so are we. Health is our natural state. Although the world would have us believe something otherwise, believe that illness is our natural state, like what you see on TV every night in those countless commercials about drugs, enough drugs that would sink a ship. And they tell you in the first minute of the commercial what the drug is supposed to do for you, and then they go on. Then they say, this drug may cause you to shake and quiver and destroy your liver, and walking will be a thing of the past. And then the warnings. Don't take this drug if you have eaten any food in the past month, or if you've breathed the fresh air outside, or if you've gone to a game of the Washington Nationals. So some of us have tried everything, all the teachings of unity, all the practices, and we've put them into place. And yet, sometimes the cure from certain illnesses or conditions doesn't happen. For some reason, we don't know necessarily the reason. It is a mystery. So what if a cure doesn't happen? When our teachings tell us that we are responsible for our life, how do we hold the belief that we create our own health with our thoughts and consciousness without blaming us for our ailment? We need courageous conversations in unity so as not to do metaphysical malpractice to ourselves or to others when a cure doesn't happen. Our practice is really to hold all things spiritual as a paradox. It is to claim our oneness with God, to do everything that we need to do to heal ourselves, to put all of our energy into that healing. And then, at the same time, if it doesn't happen, to release and to surrender and embrace peace through our trust in God. You see, that paradox often looks like it's opposites, but really spiritually they can be held together. You know, Myrtle Fillmore, our co-founder of Unity, did this. When it was her time to die, she went around and told her friends and family, "I'm going to be leaving this world shortly." And they all said, "Well, what are you talking about? You're not even sick." And she said, "It's my time to go. I can do better work on the other side." And she went. Maybe you know this story. It's very beautiful to me. She went to Silent Unity, to all of the people that she had worked with over all of those years, and she gave each one of them a rose and said goodbye to them. And then she very quietly died with that peace and that understanding. You know, one of the things that Myrtle said is there are no discords in my being. There is only peace. And certainly peace will heal us. Peace will carry us through all the difficult times. And at some point, our soul's journey here on this earth will be complete. And my book is about having that courageous conversation to hopefully die without trying to control how it is happening. I hope I'm up to that. To be able to trust and let go into the peace and the love of God. I love this quote from Myrtle. "In the beginning of unity, healing seemed to be the most important thing in life to me. I loved seeing folks get well and happy. I do yet, but I have learned that the spiritual awakening and the daily development of the Christ power are more important. The individual must be helped to unify his spirit, soul, and body in harmonious living here and now. Every spiritual development towards wholeness can be called healing. Healing is about developing our soul." Well, I want to share with you in my workshop today at 12:30 some of the ideas that I have learned. And we will be able to have courageous conversations together. where we can share our feelings and questions about death and dying and engage in an experience of opening our hearts together. In this workshop, I intend to touch on some of the most common fears about death and dying. Do we ever really die alone? How can we understand the illness of Alzheimer's and dementia and still hold it in a spiritual context? What have we learned from near-death experiencers? And what actually happens to us when we die? Let's just dispel this mystery. I can give you some facts about it. I hope you will join me in this experiential workshop today. If life is a school, and I believe that it is, we could think of death as our final exam for this lifetime. How well did we embody our truth principles? To be one with God, to trust God's beneficence. How well did we learn who we truly are as the Christ in order to traverse dying free of fear and with understanding and peace? At death, when we are stripped away of almost everything, the only thing that remains is our divine spiritual essence, our eternal soul, which holds the accumulation of all of the learning and all of the love that we have experienced and grown in our soul during this lifetime. Will we traverse the end of life with fear or perhaps with curiosity and anticipation of all that is before us? As Eleanor Roosevelt said, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face." The courage and hope that we have to commit to engaging in courageous conversations and also commit to embodying our spiritual principles becomes a life worthwhile, a life well lived. Well, I invite you to be with this song because life is also very fragile and very precious. Listen to the words of this song as we take this time now to go into our meditation.
This day is fragile, soon it will end. And once it has vanished, it will not come again. So let us love with a love pure and strong before this day is gone. This day is fleeting when it slips away. Not all our money can buy back this day. So let us pray that we might be your friend before this day is spent. This day, if given, is golden. Let us show for one more.
pass by. So before it's too late to recapture the time, let us share love, let us share God. Before this day is gone, before this day is gone.
So if you haven't already